Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday Morning MV Pro Call. Today is Thursday, May 18th, and I'd like to welcome those of you that are here listening to this live, as well as those of you listening via recording, which, of course, you can do by subscribing to whatever podcast application you happen to use, like Google Podcasts or anything like that, or by visiting motorvitality.com, where you can listen to years and years and years' worth of archives. And speaking of that little announcement that I make pretty much every week, I was just alerted by a couple people this last week that something glitchy happened with the podcast that we uploaded. And even though the titles and topics are correct for the last probably 10 or 12, I haven't gone back so far to see how many, but there are it basically got mixed around on some of the old episodes. So the title's correct and the days are correct, but when you click on them, you're listening to old content. So I'm working. I should have time. We have a class here this week at the installer training facility, and I haven't had time to sit down and correct all of that, but I should have that done by the weekend. If after that you happen to notice that any of them are incorrect or are switched around, please let me know. But I should be able to fix that this weekend. So anyway, so fun with this. That's a challenge with me being the IT guy, as well as all the other stuff. But and sometimes you don't even know that there's a problem until we've had people that pop on there and let you know there's a problem. So I appreciate you guys letting me know. I do want to start the call off the way we do pretty much every week, except like last week where we had guest speaker, immediate past president Jim Stern. It was a great conversation. I hope you guys had a chance to listen to that, or if you enjoyed it, it was a pretty interesting conversation with Jim from A.O. Smith. So that was pretty interesting. But anyway, so this week we're going to ask the same thing we do pretty much every week, which is there anything anybody learned this last week that you wish you had known before? Anything that happened that's worthy of sharing with other professionals across the country, or anything we can help you with? Anybody have anything? Well, if not, then we'll jump straight into our topic for this week. So this is a topic that, a few years ago, my dad, my father, introduced me to a poem by a gentleman named Sam Walter Foss. And so I'm going to do something a little unusual today. I'm going to read poetry on today's MV Pro call because I think that there's a lot of relevance to our industry. In fact, every industry, but I think it can be very relevant to what we do, here, what we run into. And so this poem, anybody familiar with this poem? Has anybody ever read the poem, The Calf Path, before by Sam Foss? Just curious.
I actually, when I saw the MV, or when I saw the email come through, I actually read or listened to it on YouTube.
Oh, you did? Okay. Well, whoever read it on YouTube probably will do a better job than me reading it, but I'm about to read it here. Okay, so this is A Calf Path by Sam Walter Foss. One day through the primeval wood, a calf walked home as good calves should, but made a trail all bent askew, a crooked trail as all calves do. Since then, 300 years have fled, and I infer the calf is dead. But still he left behind his trail, and thereby hangs my moral tale. The trail was taken up next day by a lone dog that passed that way, and then a wise bellwether sheep pursued the trail over vale and steep, and drew the flock behind him too, as good bellwethers always do. And from that day, over hill and glade, through those old woods a path was made, and many men wound in and out and dodged and turned and bent about and uttered words of righteous wrath because 'twas such a crooked path. But still they followed, do not laugh, the first migrations of that calf, and through this winding woodway stalked because he wobbled when he walked. This forest path became a lane that bent and turned again. This crooked lane became a road where many poor horse with his load toiled on beneath the burning sun and traveled some 3 miles in one. And thus a century and a half, they trod the footsteps of that calf. The years passed on in swiftness fleet. The road became a village street, and this before men were aware, a city's crowded thoroughfare, and soon the central street was this of a renowned metropolis, and men 2 centuries and a half trod in the footsteps of that calf. Each day 100,000 rout followed the zigzag calf about, and over his crooked journey went the traffic of a continent. 100,000 men were led by one calf near 3 centuries dead. They followed still his crooked way and loft 100 years a day, for thus such reverence is lent to well-established precedent. A moral lesson this might teach were I adorned and called to preach, for men are prone to go it blind along the calf's path of the mind and work away from sun to sun to do what other men have done. They follow in that beaten track and out and in and forth and back, and still their devious course pursue to keep the path that others do. They keep the path a sacred groove along which all their lives they move. But how the old wise, old wood gods laugh who saw the first primeval calf. Ah, many things this tale might teach, but I am not ordained to preach. So, poem by Sam Walter Foss. What do you guys think? How is that relevant to why read that on this MV Pro call, you know, with a group of water treatment professionals? What's the relevance? Poetry. The laddie wants to do poetry. I don't know. Anybody?
A lot of times we do things because it's just the way it's always been done. Sometimes you need to look at a different way to do things. And don't do things just because it's the way it's always been done. And yeah. Place your own path.
Yeah, exactly. So any other thoughts on this before, I kind of have some thoughts myself, but any other thoughts here on that?
It's Michelle. I have a thought. Sometimes I feel like we blindly just go the way we've always gone, even if we're not following someone else's path per se. It's just the way we've always done it, and we never think to do it a different way because this is just that we're used to this way, and we don't look for new ways or come up with a new plan to do something because, you know what, this plan has worked, this way has worked, it's easy, I know it. Sometimes we don't want to take the harder path because it's different, or we think it's going to be harder because it's different. So that's just another take on it from after hearing you read it.
Yeah. Any other thoughts?
When I worked at a tool and die company, I remember quite often employees would go to the owner and say, hey, what if we try it this way or what if we try this? I mean, right down to the color of our office furniture. And his response was always, you know, we've been doing it this way for 50 years. Why change it? And you know, sometimes we need change. As I'm doing these, I'm doing interviews for a company. And one of the questions that I had one of the candidates ask yesterday was, how much does your company stay up on modern technology and change within the industry? And I thought that was an excellent question because there are a lot of companies that they've been doing it the same way for 50 years and they aren't interested in the newer technology or changing their ways, whether it's still printing something out on an old dot matrix printer instead of, you know, going to tablets or things like that. So I think sometimes we do get stuck in a rut doing it the same way all the time. And just following those who were before us, just following their path instead of trying to go off that well-beaten path.
Yeah, agreed. Anybody else? So I came up with this topic because we've got a class here this week in the, for the installer training facility, and there was somebody that had observed quite a few installs but had never done installs on their own when he came, and I was asking him, you know, why do you want to do it this way? And it's not that it's a wrong way. It's just he said, well, that's just the only way I've ever seen it done. That's the way I was taught. And so it doesn't necessarily make it the wrong way, but it sometimes gets to be a little bit of a challenge to step out of your comfort zone and do something a slightly different way. And, you know, that's one of the things that, that really resonated with me on this is sometimes the path may be fine. There just may be a different path. I mean, when you look at Google navigation, you know, when you go to go somewhere, you want to go somewhere, it sometimes gives you two or three paths. And sometimes that path says similar arrival time. And then you look at it and you see which one makes the most sense. So it's a different path doesn't necessarily mean you're going to improve on the old path, but being willing to look at a new path, I think is sometimes kind of interesting. And I think, Jen, to your point, the it does get to be a little tough, a little challenging sometimes to determine whether or not, you know, some people come in and they just want to change everything. You know, they don't, even before they understand why, why it's being done. So that's always my first question when I see something that doesn't make sense. Is okay, why are you doing that? Is there a reason? So I've always done this differently. Excuse me, I've always done this differently or I've learned it differently. Why are you doing it the way you're doing it? And sometimes, more often than not actually, I learn when I ask that question, I see somebody doing something differently than the way I have always done it. I learn something new, something often that makes more sense than the way I'm doing it. So I, you know, but I think it's being willing to ask that question when you see a different path. There are tons of opportunities for that within this industry. When you see a different path, to say, okay, why are you doing it that way? You know, what is your reasoning? What is, you know, is there a more efficient way of doing that? You know, one of our instructors at this training facility, Paul Freya, who, Paul, I think you're on this call, you could probably attest to this, that, you know, Paul and I have come to our experiences on different parts of the world, you know, and we've each had different experiences. So when we come in, often when we're teaching these students, these installers, he'll say something, well, this is the way I've always done it, and this is why. And I'll go, you know, why are you doing it that way? And he'll say, because of this and this and this. I'm like, oh, my God, I should have been doing it that way all along. You know, I can't believe I've been walking up that calf path, you know, twisting and turning and you know, creating problems for so long. And I, you know, I know sometimes I'll say something and they go, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. We never did it that way, but I think it makes sense to do it that way now, you know, to change. Paul, you've got a great example when you and I were talking about this. Are you on, Paul?
I'm here. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, when we look at our industry standards, you know, Paul and I have had a lot of discussion over, you know, I mean, I've been doing this 25 years, and from the very beginning, I've always, you know, everybody has that I've known in this industry in some form or another, it's in WQA's best practices and, you know, the recommendation. Everybody talks about something called compensated hardness. And Paul's the first person in 25 years that I've spoken with, and Paul, I'm going to let you speak to this a little bit, you know, where they look at that and go, okay, where's the science behind that? You know, what is... We've all done this. This is an industry standard. In case you're not familiar, compensated hardness is the act of taking the amount of iron you have and creating some multiplier, usually 3 or 4. So you would multiply the amount of iron times 4, and you would add that to your hardness reading to get compensated hardness. So you would adjust the softener according to that compensated hardness. And the truth is, I was learned to do that. God, listen to me. I did me some learning back when I was a kid. No, God, I can't believe it. I was taught to do that way when I first came in the industry. I don't even remember the first time I was taught it. It's just what we always did. And I got to admit, I never questioned it. This is just what we did. It's what everybody does. And Jen, you and I have worked all over the country with you know, dozens and dozens of companies out there, and all of them do it that way. And that was when Paul and I have these discussions, and Paul, I'll let you speak to this here in a second. When we have these discussions, it brings to mind this poem. Like, I have never stopped to think what the science was behind it. You know, what has there ever been a study to see whether or not that really made a difference? Paul, you want to expand on this a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So when we get into the business, My father got into it in 1971, and I started working with him in 72. And we were dealing with iron removal and using softeners. And I'll say right up front, what we did may or may not work in other parts of the country, okay? So I'm not saying it works everywhere. But we were using softeners to remove relatively high levels of iron. I mean, frequently 5 to 10 parts per million, sometimes higher. And we never used compensated hardness because we'd never heard of compensated hardness. And we didn't start going to WQA events until probably the late 70s. And I think my father said when he went to the very first one, he said, yeah, I came back and you know, we were talking with people about what we were doing with iron removal, and they were saying, you can't do that. He's like, well, I don't know. We've been doing it for almost a decade and so on. And don't misunderstand me. The settings that we would use were not what you would use for hardness alone. We did change the salt efficiency as a function of iron. But whether it was 5 parts per million or 10 parts per million made almost no difference. So, yeah, so I wouldn't say I'm on a crusade, but when I got involved with Tanya and becoming an instructor for the Water Quality Association, I certainly brought this topic up and had some discussions with Tanya, and she said, well, what we have is anecdotal. We don't have scientific evidence that supports this theory. And so you know, Kelly and I have talked about it a few times, and I'm not saying it works, what we did works everywhere, but I am saying this basic concept of multiplying the iron to come up with this total hardness, I just don't understand it. And so, yeah, sort of questioning, I guess, is what, you know, the established norm, I guess, is what you'd call it. So, you know, it's still a work in progress to see where we end up on this. But, yeah, I mean, and although in this case I'm sort of the, I will just say, Kelly, the outlier, you know, I'm just as, I'm, you know, human nature is a funny thing. It really just, it's everywhere, and I'm as guilty as anybody else, let's say, of doing things a certain way just because either I've always done it or somebody taught it to me years ago without necessarily analyzing the basic premise, which is what you're talking about.
Yeah, because so, does anybody else have any examples of where that's happened or something that's really hit you? And that you've kind of caught yourself doing it the same way, and then I don't know, maybe in the middle of the night you wake up and go, why am I doing it that way? You know, what is going on there? Or, you know, anybody else have any examples of that in their own lives or in business? So I think the challenge that we run into, like I said, is in, you know, you don't want to rock the boat too much sometimes, although rocking the boat is how advancements happen, right? If you didn't have people out there that were willing to look at the calf path and say, you know what, there needs to be a better way here. Yeah, it might be a little more difficult to build this brand new road. It might cost an investment, might take some time. You know, it might be a little bit of more of a challenge, but in the long run, I mean, you think about it, that's why bridges are built, right? I mean, you know, you go around, you know, you can go 80 miles around. Let's go even big. Look at the Panama Canal, right? I mean, that's what the ships used to have to go all the way around South America to get to the other side of the world, you know, and now, you know, with the Panama Canal, that's a huge endeavor. When you build this big trench between these two oceans, you know, that's gargantuan. It's huge. So I'm not saying creating a new path is not, you know, is always easy. But I think the first question is, okay, why are we doing the old path? You know, why are we doing that? Is there a legitimate reason that we're doing that? You know, something like the Panama Canal may have been that you didn't have the technology or even, you know, people didn't understand mapping really, you know, but you need to have that person who looks at that and says, doesn't make a lot of sense. Why are we doing that? And if nobody can give an answer on why, then that's where we come up with the ideas. That's where innovation comes from. I will tell you when I run into that sometimes, you know, it's my call. I can talk about my training facility here. You know, when I came up with this idea for the training facility, I think this is a good idea. I think it's good, but nobody's ever done this as far as I know in this industry. And so then I started questioning myself, why, you know, what am I missing? why hasn't anybody ever done this before? What is, you know, clearly there are people more qualified and smarter than I am in this industry. And one would assume they've looked at it and said, this won't work. Why won't you do that? You know, you can't do that. And so I started asking around. I started talking to key people I know in the industry. And you know, the idea came into my head for this thing because I've listened to people from all over the country ask, you know, where do we send our guys to make the mistakes? You know, where do we? I mean, it's terrifying to send the new installer out into the home for the first time. You know, and so I started asking people around, okay, where do you go? What do you do? You know, why hasn't anybody done something like this? And there were no answers. And I guess nobody out there said that they've ever given it any thought. You know, oh, that's a great idea. Yeah, we should do that, you know. And so that's where the first step comes, is just asking, you know, asking, how do you do it? Is it possible? You know, kind of thinking out. I will tell you, Jen, to your point, salespeople often come in and they want to immediately change it. And this is something that I want to just point out as well, that, you know, they people come in and say, well, that's not the way we did it at the old job. You know, that's not the way we did it at the other company. And honestly, I hate hearing that because you don't work at the old company anymore. But I do think that we do have to be willing to listen to those ideas. If you have somebody new come in there, say, okay, why did you do it that way? You know, is there a reason you did it that way that makes sense? You know, maybe it does make sense to change that. I often tell salespeople, look, I don't have a problem, or actually anybody that I work with, I don't have a problem if you want to reinvent the wheel. What I have a problem with is if you try and reinvent the wheel before you understand how the existing wheel rolls. You know, so if you're trying to create a new wheel before you understand the concepts of how a wheel works, that's a problem. Any thoughts on this? Anybody have an opinion, thoughts on this? So
it's a matter of where do you get your feedback from?
Yeah.
I think a great resource is when you bring somebody in, say a new hire. I always like to tell them that, you know, a lot of the things that we do around here, we've done because we've done them for a long time. A lot of those things, there have been great deals of discussion and back room and blood, sweat, and tears of those decisions of what we do it, but it doesn't mean it's the right way to do it. So somebody coming in from the outside with varied levels of experience can come in and look at it differently. And if you see something and there's a different way to do it, I would like you to bring it up. Don't go rogue on me, and don't just go out and start doing it. But if you think there's a better way to do it, I would love to hear your I'd love to hear your input. And if it's a better way to do it, I would be happy to implement it.
You know, I think that's really an important point, Scott, that you definitely have to be bringing those new perspectives in. And even if that new person doesn't have a better way of doing it, I think it's a prime opportunity when they ask, why are we doing it this way? I think it's a prime opportunity to ask yourself, yeah, why are we doing it that way? And if the answer is because that's the way we've always done it, that's the way I learned, that's the way I've – it might warrant some further evaluation on that. Do you guys agree with that? You know, that just a – you know, how many times does somebody ask you? You know, it's sort of like a kid saying, why, Dad? Because I told you so. Isn't it kind of the same thing because we've just always done it that way? If that's the answer, it – you know – I mean, look, and I realize the reality of this within our own businesses too. We're wearing a billion hats, you know, and you know, like I said, the Panama Canal, or I'll go back and use Jen's, you know, example of the dot matrix printer, right? We've run into clients like that where they have, you know, they're using an old CRM that. I mean, I, you know, there's that still is based on Windows DOS, you know, so, you know, or some old program where they're using a dot matrix printer and you're going, why, you know, why aren't you switching? And there's because the, you know, the time and money that it takes to make that switch can be really tremendous sometimes, you know, that can be really hard. I mean, you know, why aren't they making the switch? Because they, you know, the time that it would take to take all the data, you know, they have that old platform in it and it's not able to map that information over to the new platform. And so they're just trucking along. And you talk to them, you know, you really need to increase your technology, you know, change it and prove there's a lot. They're like, I know, but I just don't have time to take all that data and sit down and you know, and transfer it over. So there's some legitimate reasons. People have ideas and they want to grow and they want to move. You know, without the assistance and advice and feedback and support of other people in the industry, there's no way that we would have been able to build this training facility even. You know, the amount of time and money and effort that it took to put into even this tiny little endeavor. You know, so I realize that the reality is just because you have an idea that you want to grow and improve and that you realize that calf path is not efficient, the road's already built. You know, and so there is some of that as well, but we need to really make that a priority to create the different road, to build the different bridge. Any final thoughts on the topic? I think I've sort of beat the dead calf on this. So any final thoughts? Anybody else have any opinions?
I think one of the biggest things is being able to stay relevant. Because if you follow the same path over and over and over again, it may work for some of the time, but just like our tactics or our equipment or anything like that, our clientele evolves too, and they want different things. They have different things in mind where, you know, you have your people who maybe just want an old time clock unit. Then you have people who want, you know, one of the smart units so they can see how much water they use. If they're gone, see if there's a leak that's coming through their house. And
mm-hmm.
So, I mean, following the same path, you're eventually going to walk out of relevance, whereas follow the same path but still kind of forge your own in a way, you'll continue to maintain relevance.
I think that's really true, and I think it's why we have new technologies that come out there, right? I mean, we can all think about some of those companies, those brands that haven't changed in, you know, half a century. And you know, how that impacts, you know, their growth and competing with the newer technologies that are out there today. Although I gotta say, if you have a product that's been around for 50 years still competing, whether they're doing it well or not, you gotta give credit to that product, you know, that it's withstood that test of time. There's a lot of products that are out there that are. You know, that have not had a 50-year lifespan, you know, so you got to give them credit. But eventually, if they don't grow and learn and you know, and come up with a new path, you're right, you're going to get left behind. So, all right, guys, any other final comments here? We got about 2 minutes left here.
If you continue to do the same thing over and over and over again, you get the same results. In some instances, not bad. In some instances, terrible. And employees and employers should always be asking their employees to be curious, ask those questions. You may have come up with something very, very brilliant from somebody that had no idea that they had a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Do that
often. I mean, so create an environment as an owner or manager. That's a great point. Create an environment that allows your team to come up with those ideas. That's an awesome idea. Absolutely. Yep. Perfect. Okay. So with that profound statement, we'll end the call. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for the poetry reading time. We will talk to you next week, if not before. Be safe, everybody. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
Kelly.